This is Brian Meador from East Carolina University. You are listening to The Sports Objective, the official, unofficial podcast of the Pirates.
Welcome into the Sports Objective. We're under lights here tonight on a Tuesday night. If you're watching live, obviously, so glad to have you. So we're getting closer and closer to college football. Man, the college football landscape and college athletics in general, it's changing by the second, it seems like, this year, as we talked about ad nauseum. And of course, our media days for ECU football is coming up on Saturday. We'll have a live show podcast for that. We'll be talking about that later on. But Bubba, we have a very special guest talking about the change in college football and the landscape of college football. I'm glad you got him on.
Absolutely, Dave. Have really enjoyed this guy's content over the last few weeks. His YouTube channel, like I've commented to him, as he well knows, has been exploding. Hundreds of thousands of views. Welcome in from, as you see there at the top of the screen, K-Man Radio in Manhattan, Kansas, K-State alum John Kurtz. John, we appreciate your time.
Hey, absolutely, guys. Really appreciate you having me. I'm excited to talk some football with you guys.
We wanted to have you on, and I know Kyle is chomping the bit. Well, I'll let you defer to you in just a second, Kyle. But, John, I'm going to tee things off here, and then I'll let Kyle run with it, too. A lot of stuff happening right now. We're hearing, obviously, I had a chance to listen once again to the commissioner of the American, Mike Resco, the media days. We have that on our shameless plug, but we have that on our YouTube channel for folks to check out, not only the commissioner, but all the coaches for ECU and all the members of the American. But interesting time here, as the years before, 5 years ago, it looked like that members of the American were going to be poached by the Big 12. It ended up that they pretty much just stayed the same, obviously. And now with Texas and Oklahoma going to the SEC, it looks like in the next couple of years, then there's eight members remaining. Then there's all kinds of stuff I'm hearing about the Big Ten and the ACC and was it Pac-12, those like an alliance there. It's all kinds of crazy stuff going on. It sounds more, Kyle and I are big wrestling fans. It sounds more like a wrestling storyline than it does college football. What's your take on everything? And then I'll let Kyle jump in.
Yeah, it's funny you say that. I think that's a good comparison, pretty apt to the wrestling world. A comparison that we've been using is it feels a lot like Survivor. Now, I'm not a real Survivor fan. I haven't watched much of the show, but my producer of my radio show is a huge Survivor fan. And he was like, look, man, this is what it's all about. You form little alliances with people. And then when you don't need them, you kick them to the curb. And at the end of the day, it's every man for himself. And that's really what it feels like, especially in the Big 12 right now, where everybody is outwardly preaching loyalty and unity and wanting to stay together and milk every penny that they can out of Texas and Oklahoma. But privately, behind the scenes, you know that everybody is also working for the best option for themselves and trying to find a Power 5 life raft. And most importantly with that, just a financially viable life raft that's going to be somewhere close to the $37 million per year payout that Big 12 schools have been getting right now. So it's wild. I mean, it is a very disconcerting time for most of the fan bases, if not all of the remaining eight. I think there are some delusions of grandeur with Kansas and the Big Ten, but everybody else right now seems pretty resigned to the fact that there are not a lot of great options out there right now, and especially in light of the news on Friday that, yes, the Big Ten, the Pac-12, and the ACC are working together in an alliance. I think that's really heightened everybody's fear of where this is going for the Big 12. Because to me, look, we'll see what the alliance actually winds up doing. I mean, they're certainly talking about scheduling games together. On top of that, a voting block that you could form against the SEC, and I think that's going to be really interesting to monitor what happens down the road in terms of NCAA governance and playoff expansion and all the things that could be happening there. But in general, what it tells you is those leagues are not thinking about Big 12 leftovers. They are thinking about bigger fish that they have to fry, namely stopping the SEC as much as they can or competing with the SEC. And the Big 12 right now is just left by themselves trying to figure it all out and piece it together. So it's a very interesting time. Not something that I really wanted to go through again here at this point. Conference realignment is somebody who did got in on the tail end of conference realignment when I first started my career about 10 years ago. But hey, we're here immersed in it, and nothing you can do but just try and find your way through.
John, you know, from the American Athletic Conference standpoint, we've been on the outside looking in for a while now. Meaning looking in at being part of the autonomous five, I refuse to say power five, and for that, the BCS. A lot of rumors, a lot of speculation out there. One thing that happened, you know, a few years back when it looked like, I guess it was 2016, that it looked like the Big 12 was going to expand. There was a lot of talk of Houston, a lot of talk of Cincinnati. And then the end of the day, the Big 12 added nobody. And I think it irritated a lot of American Conference teams at the time. If the eight stay together, the eight Big 12 members, if nobody comes and bails any of you guys out, the thought I'm sure amongst you guys is to backfill. Who can you take from the American? Maybe who can you take from the Mountain West? Would BYU be interested, or would that be an option, et cetera? What kind of money are you hearing that the eight remaining members, what kind of dollars and cents value are you guys hearing as the eight together right now as a league? Without adding anybody, and of course you would, but without adding anybody, without Oklahoma and Texas, you guys are getting, what, $20 million now per, I believe, per school with Oklahoma and Texas. The number I heard was $9 to $10 million. Is that what you're hearing?
Yeah, so the overall per-team payout has been at least, I believe this is the 2019 number and not the 2020 number, but it was $37 million, but that's not just TV. That's everything, right?
I'm speaking TV revenue only.
Just TV, right. So TV, I believe, was 25. And then what Bob Bowlsby, the Big 12 commissioner, had said is that without Texas and Oklahoma, he was saying it would be 50%. So, yeah, now you're at 12 and a half million right there. And I think there are some who would tell you that that is – perhaps a little bit too bullish on what the value of those eight teams would be. So it very well could be more like 9 to 10 at the end of the day when it's all said and done. And if you're Bob Bowlsby, you know, you probably have to posture that it's going to be a little bit better than that. But I mean, it is sobering, and like it's understandable. I mean, The Athletic had one of the most eye-opening pieces that I've seen here throughout this whole process, where they outlined the TV viewership numbers minus Texas and Oklahoma. And it was like, it was like 90,000. Maybe you guys know the specific number. It was like 90,000 was basically the difference between the American and the eight remaining teams in the Big 12. Fairly negligible when it comes to what the value would be if you're shopping that TV contract around. So it's a tough reality, I think, for all of us to deal with, that fancy ourselves definitely Power Five schools that have performed very well. You know, I mean, you think about Oklahoma State, they've won eight games, eight of the last 10 years. K-State's the third winningest program in the Big 12 over the last decade, but nobody really cares nationally and wants to watch. And unfortunately, that's what really matters here. So yeah, the finances right now are not looking great for the remaining eight teams.
Yeah. And I think maybe, you know, the wanting to make sure you stay Power Five, I think it's almost being overthought. If the eight that are remaining are still quality programs to me, and you know, I talked about it off the air, you know, you got 10 all sports members of the American. Navy's football only, Wichita State doesn't play football. So to me, you take those 10 all sports members of the American, you take the eight Big 12 schools, you put together an 18 team league. I think that 18 team league would have a lot of value. You're talking about some major media markets. You're talking about some intriguing matchups. You're talking about a hell of a basketball conference also. If you got Kansas, Memphis, Cincinnati, Oklahoma State. I mean, so I don't know, you know, you're hearing a lot of that from the American, that, hey, you know, if Big 12 comes to invite Cincinnati, UCF, let's stay together and try to work out a merger. I'm assuming most Big 12 schools, don't want to see that because it's almost like an ego thing, I would think. We're here, you're there. We're part of the Power Five, they're not, meaning the American. But I think there would be a lot of value in the two leagues merging, and also you protect yourself. If you have 18 schools, and then let's say the Pac-12 does decide they want to take Texas Tech and Oklahoma State and get into the Texas market instead of just the West Coast, Pacific Time Zone, and Mountain Time Zone, or the Big Ten does decide one day they want to take Kansas and Iowa State, if you have 18 teams, you've protected yourself. If you lose a couple more now, you still got 16.
Yeah, look, I think you could do a lot worse, certainly. And I think you're spot on about the ego thing. I mean, just to be honest, there's absolutely that there. I think that would be a hard thing to give up for a lot of these schools. But, you know, there are so many factors and variables here that would determine, like, how viable this would be. Do you still keep Power 5 status? Does that even matter?
Yes. I think you would. Because, you know, the American is so close right now. You know, and if the 12-team playoff expansion happens, it really doesn't matter because
you're right.
That is certainly, when the two leagues merge, that is certainly the fifth best conference, and the top six conferences are supposed to get in, so it doesn't matter. But yeah. I do think you would keep Power 5 status. I really do.
Yeah, it's an important point that you make about the playoff, and it's something that I think it's under talked about in some ways right now. Is that yes, assuming that the playoff does wind up going the way that it appeared that it was headed toward, then it wouldn't really be that big of a deal and you would still be okay. And frankly, I mean, for some Big 12 schools, there are advantages for that. If we're talking locally here in Manhattan, the easier path to the playoff would be merging the two conferences and having that league and just having to win that league to get into the playoff as opposed to right now going through Oklahoma. So that becomes more attractive as far as that's concerned. And I think the other thing, and this really goes for whether it's the Big 12 poaching some teams from the American, if it were going to be a joint link up with the two conferences getting together, the thing that I do like and I think could change at least some of how we feel about all of this in Big 12 country is not just what does it look like in the immediacy of combining or bringing those teams in, it's what is the potential of that down the road for the next TV contract, because the dynamics will change a lot. Streaming is obviously completely changed. For instance, how realignment is being viewed this time around versus last time around when schools like Rutgers had a lot of value just because of the New York, New Jersey market, which seems a little bit silly in retrospect. So the dynamics of it will be different in 10 years. And the potential of the Big 12 has seen like TCU come into the conference and get Power 5 resources at their disposal, Power 5 money at their disposal, and flourish and be pretty good. What if you give UCF the resources that would come along, or the stature, whatever it's going to be? I guess financially we could debate how much better it would be financially for them, but just giving them a little bit of a boost, a little bit of elevation there in their profile nationally, well, maybe they start to play their way into being an even bigger deal than they are right now. Houston, you know, I mean, there are so many schools.
Cincinnati.
Well, Cincinnati's already there right now. I mean, yeah, we're sitting here talking about Cincinnati like they're not. They're preseason number
eight.
So, you know, I mean, I think the value of it could be more than what we think it is right now by the time the next TV contract comes around. Now, you're never, I mean, what are the SEC payouts going to be by then? They may be pushing like 80 mil by that point. So you're never going to catch up to them. But I do think it could look better than what it feels like right now for a
while. Well, to me, financially, you know, I think if you could get up to that between 15 and 20 million per school number initially, then I think you had a chance down the road to expand from that. You got to think about it. You got a conference championship game. You know, let's say it were played this year. I don't know who the best remaining eight, the eight remaining members of the Big 12. But let's just, for sake of argument, say it's Oklahoma State versus Cincinnati in a conference championship game.
Wow.
You know, that's going to have some eyeballs. That's a good ball game. I mean, UCF against Kansas State. I mean, you know, that's a good ball game. I think there's some value there that people aren't realizing. There's a lot of media markets in the American, a lot of room for growth. To me, if you just look at the amount of growth from Conference USA to the American, schools like UCF, Houston, SMU, Memphis have had from Conference USA to getting into the American, it's been dramatic. And East Carolina's been down right now because of a lot of bad decisions internally over the last 5 to 6 years. But I've always said it. We are the football school in this state with, apologies to App State.
And what about North Carolina?
Well, like I said, we are the football school in the state.
Ranked top 10, baby.
If you give East Carolina Power 5 status, I think we out-recruit everybody in the state. I think what would happen at East Carolina is what happened at Virginia Tech in the 90s.
Yep.
I think you ever give us Power Five status where we are on the playing field with the ACC, it's curtains. I think we would become the school in North Carolina in football because we care about it more than any of the other schools in the state. You know, I think there's a lot of potential there. I think it's gonna take some Big 12 schools losing some egos and probably being told no, not only by other conferences, but by maybe some members of the American. You know, that's the whole thing. Cincinnati and UCF and et cetera, Houston can talk a good game about staying pat with the American, but when the invites actually come, would they turn them down?
And John, the ultimate thing here, as you know, because you're in Big 12 country, is the reason why Oklahoma and Texas left is because of the TV contract. They saw the TV deal, the handwriting's on the wall. I don't blame them as far as what their best interests. I know it's not great for the Big 12, but when they saw the numbers are not increasing and they're maybe losing out, and it's no disrespect to, I think you got, there's a lot of great schools in the conference, but money-wise, money talks. And I think that I've even heard if the merger happens, it could be up to $15 million a school. That's the most I've heard. But if you look at that particular amount of money, in other words, the merger sounds like you guys would make more money than if you poach schools from the American. I'm not saying that because I'm biased towards American, but that's what I've heard over the last couple weeks. And who knows? It's rumors. It's not until I see a deal in place or anything happening, then it's just all speculation. But I hope that we can – I would love to have you guys like have some kind of deal because I think there's a lot of – and 5 years ago – it wasn't I didn't want to be a part of the Big 12. I just didn't want to have happen what happened is that we were, you know, rejected. And I thought that was it was to me at that time, not to throw shade on the Big 12, but it was disrespect. And so I'm like now, like if you're UCF and some of the other schools that had a legitimate shot, like Houston, who's paying a coach $4 million a year to be a group of five coach, they felt very slighted. They were very hurt. So that's one thing that if you're coming in, I don't know, there's going to be some ill feelings. Maybe it's been 5 years ago. Maybe there would not, but it, not only the egos for the Big 12, but there's also members of the American that felt like, and we as one school, East Carolina, that we've been left out, left away from the table. And we deserve a seat at the table, so to speak, when it comes to quote unquote Power Five. I mean, if you look at our numbers pre-COVID, and obviously pre-bad decisions before 2016, we have around 50, 40 some thousand every game.
Yeah, we were, you know, and this is as they sell East Carolina. Our viewers know what East Carolina is. So we used to be BYU. If you want to count BYU as a group of five, if you don't, we were the top drawing up until bad decisions. We were the top drawing group of five school. We averaged between 40 and 50,000 every game. And unfortunately, bad decisions change that. John, one question I had from you or for you about, you know, I mentioned the Pac-12 earlier. Are you surprised the Pac-12 of all the conferences hasn't made a move to, you know, they've struggled during the playoff era. Are you surprised they haven't gone after an Oklahoma or a Texas Tech or you know, pick two schools to get into that market?
Yeah, I don't know that I would say I'm surprised necessarily. I can understand why there would be a thought of getting into Texas. That is really the thing that I think would make some sense for the Pac-12 if they want to establish at least some kind of foothold in Texas. While at the same time getting games on in the central time zone, which we know like that's been the eternal struggle for the Pac-12 is just getting people to see their games and not playing at 10 o'clock at night. And that's why like all the Pac-12 talk is always centered around Texas Tech. And as weird as it is, Tech has really been like the linchpin of a lot of the talks in conference realignment with the Big 12 in general. Now, I think some of that's slowing down again with the alliance from last Friday, but Texas Tech is by far the biggest enrollment out of the three schools left in the state of Texas. TCU and Baylor, much, much smaller. Texas Tech was actually second in the Big 12 behind Texas in enrollment. They're like 38,000. Lubbock is much bigger than the typical college town. It's over 200,000 population-wise, and they do have a pretty big alumni base in DFW. So I think that was really the key, like thinking Texas Tech and then them working with Oklahoma State. And then it was, would the Pac-12 be interested in TCU and Baylor because they're smaller private religious institutions and that doesn't really jive with the culture of the Pac-12. So there was a lot of discussion around that, and I do think there is some value for the Pac-12 in that. But honestly, what we also now know is that with this alliance, that the talks have been going on for 2 to 3 weeks, reportedly. That's what The Athletic reported. So knowing all of this, it's like even well, the meeting with Bob Bowlesby happened last week for 6 hours between the two commissioners of the Pac-12 and the Big 12. Pac-12 had also been having backdoor conversations with the Big Ten and the ACC kind of working towards this alliance. So I think they probably have had this feeling all along that they were going to get something worked out on that front and get some level of protection from the Big Ten and the ACC with that. And so that's probably slowed their role, I would imagine, on wanting to get into the Big 12. And the other part of it, too, is like I do understand the Pac-12 needing some sense of urgency because, hey, what happens if USC gets raided? What happens if the Big Ten plucks them? But it's not like these Big 12 schools are going anywhere. The Pac-12 certainly has the leverage to come back at any point in time, and anybody in the Big 12 right now would just crawl on broken glass to get into a Pac-12 that still includes USC. So I think that's really a lot of it. I just, you know, it's a hard one to swallow for Big 12 fans, but it's just I don't think anybody has really been thinking much about them. It's all about bigger picture maneuvering on a giant chessboard that right now is being hoarded over by Greg Sankey, the commissioner of the SEC.
I had a follow up to Bob Bowlesby in the Pac-12. Do you think the Pac-12 commissioner was just humoring Bowlesby basically? And also, where do the 8 schools remaining? How do you guys feel about Bob Bowlesby?
I would say that there is probably an element to humoring Bob Bowlesby. I don't know if it would be like outright as disrespectful as that sounds, but I would guess that. And I always mess this guy's name up, but George Kliavkov, I believe, is the pronunciation there for the Pac-12 commissioner. I would imagine that there is some level of him just doing his own due diligence because he's a very new commissioner. This is a very green commissioner. You have a lot of those out there right now, which makes this all the more interesting. But I think there's a part of that where like he could find some value in that, even if he doesn't have serious intentions of carrying anything out with the Big 12, where it's just getting to know Bowlesby, getting to know the dynamics of where the Big 12 is at. So I still think there could be some value in it for him where he's not just literally doing it just for the sake of charity. And they did meet for 6 hours. I wouldn't think you'd give up 6 hours of your time if there was nothing in it for you. But that also raises the question like, okay, what are the ulterior motives there potentially for the Pac-12? So, yeah, I think there's an element of that. I would say that the trust in Bob Bowlesby at this point is not high. And I think some of that is fair. Some of that is unfair. I was at Big 12 Media Days in Arlington at Jerry World. It was about a month ago, but it was 6 days before the story broke about Texas and Oklahoma to the SEC. And Bob Bowlesby gets up at the podium and is asked a question about conference realignment and literally said the words, "It's not something that keeps me up at night." Really downplayed that there was anything to worry about there. And that was, again, 6 days before this story broke. So he very much had egg on his face and got caught very flat-footed. And there's a lot that's fascinating with that. Joe Castiglione, the AD at Oklahoma, is one of Bowlesby's best friends. And I think he feels like there's a level of betrayal there for how he got hung out to dry. So that doesn't make him look good. It doesn't, I think, ensure a lot of trust with the other Big 12 members. But at the same time, I'm not sure that there's a lot that Bowlesby could have done differently to make any of this change, just because you said it, money talks. The Big 12 was pretty down the line in terms of negotiations with ESPN and Fox. They just didn't have interest in negotiating right now. They keep getting stuck with all these 11 a.m. kickoffs on Fox. Oklahoma's been very upset about that because that's like the quote-unquote primetime slot right now in the Big 12 is to play Big Noon Saturday, and 11 a.m. screws up recruiting and teams don't like it. There are a host of problems, but really it all boils down to Texas has always kind of bullied everybody around in this league. Oklahoma, with what they've done competitively, obviously carries a lot of cards there too. They were going to do what they want to do and what's best for them, because everybody else in the league, there's some truth to the fact that they were being subsidized by these two schools. And so everybody had to just kind of bow down. And I don't know that anything Bob Bowlesby could have done would have changed any of the dynamics of that. So long story short, there's not a lot of trust in him, but I think he does turn into, he just gets beaten down a little bit more than he should. People go over the top with some of that when they don't really need to, because nobody could have really stopped this from happening.
And John, with that very thing, you talk about the Pac-12. I've heard, I don't know, and no disrespect again to the Big 12 members, but I've heard one of the, not only you talk about the religious aspect, there's like an elitist attitude I talk about with the Pac-12, and I'm not beating up on them as far as academics are concerned with members of the, and I'm not playing that game with you guys. I think a lot of institutions academically are great. So I don't play that. And then the other thing, a piece of it is I've heard the Pac-12, as far as how much value would those teams add to the Pac-12, I'm not hearing this big number like I thought I would. I haven't heard specifically like dollar amounts, but I've just heard that if you, even if you added like a handful of teams or that, it wouldn't be the number that the Pac-12 wanted. And across the board, as far as the other conferences are concerned, with different conferences, they said, hey, West Virginia is going to have to add this amount of money, like the ACC, 70-some million dollars before we'll entertain the idea. So I guess they can be picky and choosy. But as far as the Pac-12 is concerned, they seem to be like out, and I hate to say it because it sounds so cliche, but they're out in their own little world, so to speak, like academically, religiously, like, okay, you guys want your own national championship? We'll have our own championship in the Pac-12. I've heard people say that. I'm like, that's the craziest thing. I don't think that's a Pac-12 belief or view, but there's members of I've heard media and Pac-12 fans that, I don't know, maybe it's a chip on their shoulder, or I don't know what it is. But
well, it's a cultural thing. The university presidents in the Pac-12, you got some very snobbish, you have some very snobbish academic schools like Stanford, Cal, also some very liberal, way to the left, that, you know, athletics aren't that important to them from an administrative standpoint. When you get to the presidents and the commissioners and chancellors, et cetera, not commissioners, presidents and chancellors. So I think that's what's going on with the Pac-12. John, I think we've already kind of beat this to death, but to me, again, with the Pac-12, to me, the value of adding the Big 12 schools wasn't necessarily adding immediate financial impact to the TV contract. It was long-term impact of, as we alluded to, getting noticed in the Central Time Zone, getting in that Texas market, so people pay more attention to Pac-12 football. To me, that was the impact rather than boosting the TV revenue.
Yeah, I think that's the only realistic pitch there if you're the Big 12, because I think Dave hit the nail on the head. Like, there's not any tangible evidence that I've seen anywhere that any of these schools would add financial value to the Pac-12 right now. So it's kind of like the whole thought of, okay, if you're taking teams from the American and there's potential on down the line of UCF, Houston, Cincinnati, whoever might be really blowing up and turning into something that would be more valuable. I think it's the same kind of idea there if you're trying to pitch yourself to the Pac-12 from the Big 12. Like, hey, the value eventually for the next TV contract of you guys having games in the Central Time Zone will eventually net you some money. It's just, it's going to be an investment. I think you'd have to look at it much more like a long-term investment than something that's going to be short-term and really help you out there. And that's again, the problem and why I think the Pac-12 hasn't really reacted very strongly to what's left in the Big 12 right now. And there is, I mean, there's also a lot of truth to what you guys talked about with the cultural differences there. And, you know, we could play off some of the stereotypes in the Pac-12, but a lot of that is like legitimate. You know, I mean, I think the university presidents there, I think they care quite a bit about the AAU status, just like the Big 10 does. Yep. Maybe not quite as much as the Big 10 right now, but that's only because of necessity. Like, the Big 10 can be much more picky than the Pac-12 can right now. So I think they would probably be more willing to open their doors to non-AAU schools than the Big 10 would right now. But that's very much the ideal that they like to follow. And that's very much the type of school that they would want to add. And so that's another issue that you're fighting. Like, any Pac-12 person that I've talked to, whether it's a media member or even just hearing from some of their fans, like, I have not seen a single person associated with the Pac-12 be excited or really entertain the idea of adding Big 12 schools. That's just not something that they really are interested in. And a lot of it, I think, comes down to a lot of that cultural stuff that you guys hit on there. So that's kind of the conundrum facing the Big 12 right now.
Yeah, and to me, you go back to the Big 12 and the American, and you mentioned upside with UCF, Cincinnati, et cetera. To me, right now, just right now, you take the eight remaining Big 12 schools and you put them against the top eight teams in the American. Go down that list. I mean, who do you think would win? I mean, who of the eight teams, who would be best this year of the eight remaining on paper?
It would definitely be Iowa State.
All right, Iowa State, Cincinnati. Yeah. Who you got?
Yeah, I mean, it's a great point, a great question, because they're number seven and number eight in the preseason poll, right? I mean, how do you pick that game? I don't know.
UCF, Oklahoma State. You know, let's go. I think the conference is pretty even, and I think there's potential. You know, as you mentioned, Texas Tech has a huge enrollment. TCU, you got the Dallas-Fort Worth media market. Oklahoma State got a ton of money. It's still the number two school in the state of Oklahoma. But to me, there's a lot of potential for a lot of schools in the American. That's what I say. You know, you mentioned earlier, you know, let's say USC does leave the Big 12, or excuse me, the Pac-12. Let's say the Big 10 decides to invite USC and Oregon. Okay. Well, if you got 18 teams, and now the Pac-12 comes calling for two or four from those 18, well, you still got a solid league put together. I don't know. To me, the merger protects both leagues. It protects the American. It protects the Big 12 going forward. You got eight. There's strength in numbers. There's a lot of wiggle room there for people to come and go.
Yeah, and I think, too, as the dominoes continue to fall, like the scenario that you're really outlining there is – how you would probably get to that. You see another domino fall somewhere else, Pac-12, Big Ten, whatever it is, and the picture starts to clear up where it's like, all right, well, we have three massive leagues here, and then you guys are kind of the leftovers, then, yeah, it starts to make a lot more sense to look at this and be like, all right, well, why don't we just strengthen numbers here, add some extra value with the top teams that we can get in both leagues and try to parlay that into the best that we can from a TV contract standpoint and just sort of consolidate. I guess that's really the word. Like if things continue to move toward that scenario, you're talking about just everything consolidating. So I can definitely see the value in there that you're mentioning.
John, Dave, and I have a couple things for you here as we are beginning to wrap this up. But I mean, talking about here and now, you know, we're right here a couple weeks from the start of the season. Very interesting season opener for K-State and taking on Stanford down in Jerry's World. So just talk about things there with the Wildcats going into year three of Chris Klieman. Won eight games in year one last year. What a strange year it was for everybody. That goes without saying. But then, you know, K-State lost that game to Arkansas State at the tail end, and then, you know, bounced back and won in Norman, rose to 16th in the country, and then lost five games. So where are things headed in year three?
Yeah, I'm glad you bring up that Stanford game, by the way. I meant to say this earlier, talking about the Pac-12, to drive the point home about the cultural differences. So the first game in that series was back in 2016, K-State went to Palo Alto. So I was going to say, look, I've been to Palo Alto. That is a world away from Manhattan, Kansas, or Stillwater, Oklahoma. a lot of Teslas driving around there. It was very interesting.
We drive Ram trucks around here.
Yeah, yeah. There were not many of those. Not many of those in Palo Alto. But, yeah, last year was a wild ride for K-State. As you mentioned there, the first 2 weeks are as indicative of the season as anything. You lose to Arkansas State. They had 40 guys out because of COVID on the entire roster for that game at home. Lose to Arkansas State. They go to Oklahoma and win. Then in week three, Skylar Thompson, who was a fifth-year senior quarterback last year, gets hurt. He's knocked out the rest of the season. And K-State promptly with a true freshman quarterback who did not have spring ball because of COVID, didn't really have a great fall camp because of COVID, like just had thrown into the fire. And they lose out the rest of the year and had some bad losses at the end of the year. They had a bunch of transfers. Went through about everything you possibly could. Now, this year, they've really stabilized things. Culture has been a big focus. They hit the transfer portal hard and brought in, I believe the number got to 10 transfers. A number of those guys are going to be plugged in and play right away. And Skylar Thompson is back. That's the important part. Sixth-year senior quarterback who's beaten Oklahoma twice. He's beaten a top 10 Oklahoma State team. He's done some really impressive things in his career. They also have Deuce Vaughn, who's, if you haven't checked him out, he is one of the most exciting players in college football. I would highly suggest his highlight reel from last year. Very good running back. So it provides a lot of optimism for the offense. They have a bunch of holes on defense, particularly the front seven. I think the secondary will be pretty good. But that's really where the question lies, which is interesting because Klieman's a defensive guy. I would have thought in year three you'd have questions on the offensive side of the ball, but not the defense. It's kind of flip-flopped right now. So I think it's a 7-5, 8-4-ish kind of team, which is what they were in the only non-COVID year that K-State has seen under Chris Klieman. They were 8-4 in the regular season and lost their bowl game to Navy, speaking of the American Athletic Conference, in what was just a root canal of a game. But now it's, hey, can you battle through the holes on defense and can you battle through a tough schedule? Because they have Stanford and then they have to play Nevada at home, who's another team that's receiving votes in the top 25. It's a really good quarterback in Carson Strong. That's a losable game. And then the first three Big 12 games for K-State out of the chute are at Oklahoma State and then Oklahoma and Iowa State, two top 10 teams coming to Manhattan after that. So it's not an easy road. I mean, there are five losable games in the first six that K-State plays. So that to me will tell the tale of the season, how they can weather that. But I think right now the feeling around here is if you can get back to 7 or 8 wins, get back to some solid footing, and feel like you're back to kind of square one where Klieman was after he took over year one from Bill Snyder, you'd feel pretty good about where things are at.
Yeah, John, you talk about Deuce Vaughn. I saw him play early last season, and I haven't analyzed him, you know, watched enough film to know if their games really even compare, but I couldn't help but to, you know, think of Darren Sproles.
Yeah, it's a perfectly fair comparison. They are both, I mean, Deuce, I'm trying to think what Deuce is listed at, and I think Sproles is maybe like 5'6". I mean, they're both tiny guys with a lot of wiggle, and both made big impacts early in their career. Now, Deuce did it as a true freshman. Darren Sproles was on some really good K-State teams back then that had a lot of talent. He had to wait his time a little bit more. And I think the one thing, you know, K-State fans will look at him and be like, hey, let's pump the brakes a little bit here and not, you know, compare him to a potential NFL Hall of Famer in Darren Sproles. But it's – look, he was as good as anybody that I've seen as a freshman at the running back position at K-State. So certainly understand the comparison there. And the way – the style in which that they play is definitely similar. They're small but, like, pretty sturdy. It's not like just a tiny, skinny guy. Small and sturdy, very shifty. I would suggest watching both highlight reels. Darren Sproles is also pretty impressive from his time at K-State. So definitely understand the comparison.
John, one of the things that we love to do in the summertime is obviously talk about things off the field. And growing up, especially in my college years, I used to love making lists, the top 80 movies and the top 80s music of all time or certain things like that. Friends of mine in college, I guess we were so bored and had nothing to do. But Bill Conley of ESPN had the top 100 coaches in the last 50 years. Just want to get your take on a hero, obviously, being your alum of K-State. Bill Snyder was number 8 on the all-time list he had. In fact, I'm reading right here, he said, which was really cool, the ultimate program builder is what Bill Conley wrote. Just want to get your thoughts on – I know fans are going to argue, depending on what your lens is of your favorite team, on what coach should be where, but I just thought it was really cool to see Coach Snyder at number 8 this week, or all-time on that list.
Yeah, see, I'm encouraged to hear that. You know, I think a lot of people don't – the thing that you need to realize with Bill Snyder is the perspective of how bad K-State was when he took over.
Yeah.
Because I would tell you, now, I'm obviously very biased, and I'm somebody that even at the end of my career, Bill Snyder and I clashed a little bit, and he was not the most fun in the world to cover by the end of his tenure, and frankly, I think hung on too long and did some things at the end that did set the program back a little bit. So it's a complicated, complex relationship. But having said all of that, – I think he's certainly done the greatest coaching job in college football history, and I would advocate for him being a contender for the greatest college football coach in history because of what he took over. He took over a program that was so bad, Sports Illustrated in their 1989 College Football Preview magazine wrote the article called Futility U about K-State, and that was the year that Bill Snyder was hired, 1989. They were on a 28-game winless streak. There was one tie in there with Kansas, a game that was affectionately called the Toilet Bowl, as both teams were terrible and tied. And it was so bad that, I mean, they couldn't have full practices when he first took over because they didn't have enough bodies to go, wow, like, you know, 1v1s in practice. They didn't have enough scholarship players. He had to run off a bunch of guys that just couldn't take the toughness that he was trying to instill in the program at the beginning of it. And he took over again, a program on a 28-game winless streak. They won one game his first year. They won 5 games his second year. They won 7 games after that, and by year 5, they were a 9-win team in a bowl game. They won a bowl game over Joe Tiller in Wyoming in the Copper Bowl. And eventually, when they hit their peak, they won 11 games 6 times in a stretch of 7 years. They reached number 1. 1998 is the year that I think would have really changed his legacy. K-State was, in my opinion, the best team in the country. They had Michael Bishop, who was the runner-up for the Heisman. They had a 17-point lead in the second half of the Big 12 championship game against Texas A&M. And if they win that game, they're going to the national championship game. They lost in double overtime, and it is one of the it makes me sick talking about it still to this day, and I was 9 years old when that happened. But I think if he wins the national championship that year, you'd have a much greater argument for that nationally. But it's incredible what he did. The turnaround story is just unbelievable, second to none. And so, yeah, it's very cool to hear about that. And I could gush about this for a very long time.
And I got one more thing. Obviously, Bill Snyder, legend. If you know, he should be in anybody's top 10 greatest college coaches of all time, probably top five for anybody. You mentioned your friends over in Lawrence. Any chance if things fall just wrong, that Kansas gets the boo-boo face and pulls a UConn and decides they're just going to worry about basketball, go play in the Big East and take football independent?
That's a good question. You know, I have not heard a lot of talk about that, but I think the problem with that, or it's not really a problem, but the reason that there hasn't been much talk about that, and again, you know, I know people look at this and maybe roll their eyes and say that I'm biased, but they have a very inflated sense of self-importance right now, in particular, as it relates to the Big Ten. They have a guy who is loosely affiliated with the program. He's a journalist, but has since moved out to work in the tech industry. He used to kind of cover the team. He is the one that really started the Big Ten rumors and said that it was imminent a couple of weeks ago and then immediately backed off. And that really caught on like wildfire with their fan base. And Kansas fans just think, hey, we've got this basketball program. We're entitled to a Power Five league because of that, no matter what.
Yeah, no matter UConn, how that worked out.
Yeah, right. Like exactly. And UConn, a team that's won national championships more recently than Kansas. And, so that is the whole aura and attitude about Kansas. There's a lot of arrogance there because of the basketball program. Hell, you can see the arrogance in the way that they've hired football coaches. They've hired Charlie Weiss and Les Miles as two of their last three football coaches, just thinking, hey, we're Kansas. We go get a name and a workout. So I think that's the problem. Like right now, they just think Kansas fans think Big Ten, if that doesn't work out, the ACC will take us, of course, because they love their basketball. We've got this basketball program. So there's just not much talk about that right now because Kansas is so hyper-focused on Big Ten, ACC. We'll be fine. It'll all be all right. And, hey, by the way, the Pac-12 would take us too if any of that doesn't work out. So that's really the Kansas mindset here at this point.
Well, tell Kansas to take a long, hard look at Connecticut. And, look, anybody would love to have Kansas basketball, except basketball does not drive the money. And it's all football-based. And they better wake up because the Kansas may have a lot of egg on their face very, very soon.
Yep, no doubt about it. John, thank you so much for coming on. Before we let you go, plug your YouTube stuff, man. You've got some great stuff out there social media-wise. Bubba and I have been checking out. Talk about that, and we'll let you run.
Yeah, and before I do that, I want to give this shout-out too. So I have been to – it's Greenville, North Carolina, right?
Correct.
I have been to Greenville before. I have been to Snuff Dogs. Is that a place?
Snuff Dogs.
Yeah. That's the one thing I remember from my my trip to Greenville.
Why were you here?
Well, so this is – I hope that this will go over well. Are you guys familiar with Josh Graham?
Yes. Yeah, we know Josh.
Okay, Josh Graham. Yeah, Josh Graham is a good friend of mine. Just I've met through some sportscasting conventions a handful of years ago and went to a convention that was in Winston-Salem and then hung out with him for a while. And we went back around Greenville. This was before, I believe, he had moved on to where he's at right now. So anyway, yeah, enjoyed it. Enjoyed it quite a bit. As far as the YouTube goes, yeah, it's just John Kurtz, just my name, JohnKurtz on YouTube. Would really appreciate it. College football content every day, conference realignment content every day right now. You can also follow me on Twitter. It's just at JL Kurtz, JLKURTZ. If you want to hear my daily radio show, wherever you get podcasts, Apple, Spotify, Google, just search The Game, KMAN. I do a two-hour local radio show here in Manhattan every day as well. And I think that's pretty much it. I have a K-State-specific podcast called Lock It Up with Kurtz with a former K-State player, Aaron Lockett, who is Tyler Lockett's uncle. Yeah, lots of ways to get in touch with me.
All right, and hopefully we'll have you back on. Appreciate it, and good luck this season to K-State.
Yeah, absolutely. Anytime, guys. Same thing to ECU.
All right. Thanks, man. Have a good night. All right. Talk to you later. Bye-bye. All right. Appreciate John spending some time with us. And now we've got another gentleman with us tonight. Appreciate his patience. Hopefully you got enough coffee there in the green room, Ted. And with us, the radio color analyst, very patient man, the patience of Job. We have Ted Pardee, the Houston Cougars radio color analyst. Thank you so much for coming on tonight with us.
You bet, Dave. My pleasure.
Wanted to have you on. We were talking, obviously, with college realignment. I know we want to talk Cougs football having you on tonight, but the elephant in the room, everything I'm hearing about with local media, national media, is dealing with conference realignment. You guys, a program, history program, as far as with the Southwest Conference, when you look at basketball and football, when I'm a little kid, man, Houston in the Final Fours, and of course the Final Four recently, and you have this year, you have all the stuff going on there. How do you guys feel about conference realignment? Do you guys want to stay in the American, go to the Big 12? What are your feelings on it?
Well, it's like a nightmare, right? It's a nightmare that rears its ugly head. Every couple of years, here we go again, right? It's musical chairs all over again. You know, I think that Houston, you know, old timers like me, we remember what it was like in the Southwest Conference. I was fortunate to play with Andre Ware when he won the Heisman, and we were absolutely curb stomping everybody. Nobody wanted to play us back in the 80s. And if you don't believe me, go ask University of Texas what they think about University of Houston. That one school has kept us out of, we think, the Big 12 to date. And, they see Houston as a competitive market for them. And yet, you know, they really don't want to play us. I could go on and on about it. But I those old Texas rivalries sure don't wear out anytime soon. And I think all this is bad for college football, to be totally honest with you. I think it's bad for student athletes. I think that the rich are getting richer. The money is starting to concentrate in a smaller group of schools. They're controlling the distribution. So they're in bed with the distribution, which, you know, is how we watch and consume college football on a daily basis or on a weekly basis in the fall. And, you know, what is college sports? Like, I think we need to have like a big long look in the mirror and decide, or, you know, what do we want the sports, the whole world of college sports to look like in 20 years? Are we still going to try to help that kid that is in a bad situation, that is an incredible athlete that can play his way out of poverty? Like, that is what, to me, the sport is all about. That's guys that I used to play with at Houston who are today successful businessmen, or we're successful NFL players. You know, I'm a preachy guy, but man, I'm for the old fashioned, like, you know, I'm glad the players are getting paid. I'm good with that. I mean, I think that there's some of that that needs to happen, but again, it's gotta be done the right way. And it can't put schools like the University of Houston or East Carolina out of business. Like, if we ever lose our athletic departments, it's over, guys. And then we all have lost. So that's my point of view when I think about where we are today with conference alignment and everything else.
Ted, do you think that it's potentially we're headed for a third breakaway where, you know, right now you have FBS and FCS. Do you think there's potential that we're about to see a third tier of Division I for football where you have your quote unquote power leagues, creating a tier higher than FBS, basically a third tier?
So I think we would be lying to ourselves if we didn't take, again, an honest look in the mirror and watch what's happening. It's right in front of our face, and it's not all of Division I football. It's right now the SEC. Yep. And I think the SEC leaves the NCAA. I think they'll be leaving the NCAA. Probably, it's already probably being worked on right now, and they're going to figure it out. But what does the Big Ten do? The Big Ten looks at themselves as an academic conference.
Yeah.
So this is where, when you were talking, you know, when you talk to the K-State guys about Kansas, and they've got a chip on their shoulder, just like Houston has a chip on its shoulder when compared to UT. You know, we're a tier one university. We feel like we deserve a seat at the table academically now. When you look at the Big Ten, they don't take schools like Houston, or they won't take a school like a school from the SEC because they think they're more elite academically. So I think that, you know, I think they are going to be held a little bit in a different light by their chancellors and their university presidents than the SEC. I think the SEC is just saying, you know what, we're all about athletics. We're all about athletics, and we don't care. And we're going to pay our players like the professionals that they are. Get over it. And I think that's where it's going. So then the real question is, you know, what do you do with Division I football? What happens to Division I football? And then you start then saying, okay, look at the Pac-12. Pac-12 is, again, another academic league. I don't know, man. Lots of question marks. But, yes, I do think that before long the SEC will leave the NCAA.
Well, the SEC thinks they're going to do it by themselves. I think they're setting themselves up for failure. I think short term they may have some success, but there's already an NFL. So you're limiting your audience. So the SEC, you know, let's say they go to 20 schools and they take Clemson, Florida State, and two more. Along, you know, Oklahoma, Texas, Clemson, Florida State, and then pick two more. I don't know who it would be. And they go to 20. I don't see how they long term. I think they'd be committing suicide. I think they'd make a lot of money over the next 10 years. 20 years from now, I think they're going to be rejoining the NCAA. if they could get the Big Ten to go with them, if you could get 40 schools maybe, I don't know. This will be interesting to see how it plays out, particularly with the alliance between the Pac-12, the ACC, and the Big Ten, almost like they're working together to try to stop the SEC, you know. I think that, yeah. You know, I don't know. My thought always was those conferences are going to break away together and we're going to have three tiers to Division One. You know, now I almost wonder if those three conferences don't need to reach out to the Big 12, to the American, to Conference USA, and the Sun Belt, apologize for the way they've been treating us, and get us to join with them and say, all right, SEC, go play for your national championship. All the rest of us are going to play for ours.
If they were smart, That's absolutely what would happen, Kyle. I just think that I remember when all the stadiums that you see that are all 90,000 plus people, you know, you go back to the 80s when I was playing, those were 60,000 seat stadiums or 40,000 seat stadiums. Okay. They weren't 100,000, you know, strong in Tallahassee. So, you know, things have changed. Things have absolutely changed and the pie has gotten bigger. I mean, I think that, you know, when my dad was the head coach of the University of Houston with a Heisman Trophy winning quarterback, the first African-American quarterback to win the Heisman Trophy, my dad's salary was $105,000 a year, 105 wow. grand. That was not that long ago. I know I'm an old man, I'm 52, but I think about it and it seems like yesterday. Things have changed. The math has absolutely changed. And now the real question is who controls this thing? That's the real question, is who's going to control the one-on-one engagement with my son's generation, you know, and the kids that are, that this is the way they consume media today. Like my kid, you know, when I was in high school, it was a big deal to have a TV in your room. My kid didn't want a TV in his room because he has this, he doesn't need a TV. You right. know what I mean? And so the whole world is upside down. I don't know, man. I don't have answers. I've got a lot of questions though. I'm with you, Kyle. I hear you, man. I think it's risky, but I think they could get, I just think the SEC they just have positioned themselves as a mini professional league at this point. And that will attract all the best athletes again, because they're going to pay more than everybody else will. I don't know.
Well, you know, what about Vanderbilt? How does Vanderbilt fit into there? How long are they going to, you know, be able to compete? Well, you know, Dave, if they become a semi-pro league, then I guess it kind of changes the recruiting aspect for Ole Miss and Mississippi State. right now, you know, if it doesn't, how long before Alabama, LSU, Oklahoma, and Texas get tired of giving Mississippi State a welfare check? I mean,
Kentucky.
Kentucky.
Carolina.
Yeah. I mean, it's to me, it's absurd what's going on. I was talking to the guy from K-State, and to me, I can go back to strength and numbers. I think right now the American and the Pac-12, or the Big 12, I'm sorry, should just merge, quit fighting with each other, merge. You got 18 yeah. and 19 teams if you include yeah. Navy's football only, and there's strength in numbers. who knows what's going to happen with all this. It's the shame of it is we're sitting here 2 weeks before week zero, 3 weeks before week one. There's going to be college football on TV in less than 2 weeks. And we're talking about conference expansion and money and, you know, not talking about ball games. And that's the real shame of it.
That's the truth, Kyle. I mean, look, man, my dad played six-man football and grew up in West Texas, and football was his ticket. It got him in, and it changed his life. And he was the only person in his family to graduate from college, and now all five of my siblings and I did, and we've got my kids have master's degrees now. I mean, sports can change people's lives, and we can never forget that. We can never forget what college athletics was intended to do, and it can change people's lives forever in a positive way.
No doubt.
Yeah, Bubba, until he got his scholarship to play in college, you know, he was a thug.
Yeah.
Not hardly. Not hardly. He,
Bubba's not even on it. I'm waiting for him.
Bubba's like, I'm tired of listening to this guy from Houston talk about the destruction of college football.
No,
but very quickly, I was going to chime in with something that East Carolina head coach Mike Houston, along the lines of what you were saying, Ted, he mentioned that in one of the last couple of press conferences, saying that he hopes this thing doesn't stray too far away from what college athletics was intended to be and what he believes is designed for.
No, I'm with you. I'm with you completely. And like, ask anybody that, you know, we all went to college. So just like, think about your own experience and think about that one student athlete that you saw, that whether it was baseball, it could have been basketball, it could have been another sport. You know, think about all that. And just, we can't lose sight of the student athlete and giving the people a chance to change their lives.
No question about it. I had a question for you regarding the American with Mike Oresko, with the commissioner moving the conference offices down to Texas.
Yeah.
I know that he says, and I get it. I get it that obviously Rhode Island was not the right fit for the American Conference. So I get that piece of it. But it's funny in the, did you see the media days with his comments about, I know everybody's going to think that I purposely, my friend said the college football playoff, I'm right in the same building. and you know, conference, it just seems,
Mike Oresko is not a stupid man.
No. He's a very smart man. How much of that would help in your case? Because you guys are in Texas. You're in the heart of the conference now, the offices. There's a lot of great teams there. How much of moving to Texas helps land these big 12 schools, Texas, Oklahoma, Kansas? They're all right there compared to being in Rhode Island where, you know, they're not anywhere close to Texas.
I think it makes a tremendous difference. I mean, you've got the dean of the Big 12 sitting in Fort Worth right now, and Gary Patterson. Don't forget, he and Mike Gundy are the most tenured coaches in that conference. And what those guys say means a lot to the Big 12.
So, do we lose Tim, or is that my connection?
Sorry.
No, we haven't.
Sorry. Internet connection. You never know, right? It. But I was going to say that I think that it was a smart move. I think that Dallas is a huge media market. Dallas-Fort Worth is a massive media market. If you want to build a conference, that's a great place to do it. What better sort of olive branch to Oklahoma State and to TCU? I know everybody thinks TCU is a small little school, but I'm telling you guys, Gary Patterson carries a lot of stroke in that league, and he is a veteran guy. They have turned that school into a powerhouse. Keep an eye on those guys this year. But yeah, I think it was a smart move. I think it was an absolutely brilliant move and makes a lot of sense for the American Athletic Conference if they want to really do something unique.
Now, the Cougs up and up with Texas Tech. so you kind of get a taste of what could be coming, you know, whether it's in the American, whether it's in the Big 12, whether it's in a merger between the two leagues. But I'd be pretty surprised if Texas Tech and Houston aren't in the same league again in the next 5 years. So are you guys ready to restart the rivalry? Or
no doubt about it. Listen, I think I think it's a natural old Southwest Conference rivalry. I played against those guys when I was at Houston, but we've had some incredible battles with those guys through the years. So I think it's a natural rivalry. I think it's a natural, it's kind of like SMU, you know, it's another natural in-state rivalry. The reality is all these kids, you know, you look at all these rosters of these Texas schools, and it's, you know, three quarters or more Texas student athletes. The vast majority of them have all gone to high school here. So they all play ball against each other in high school. They know each other. And that's how it was when I was at school. You know, I knew guys, my old high school teammates were playing at Texas and Arkansas. And so I like what that does for the camaraderie of a conference, and it heightens the rivalry and makes it a little bit more important. And I think it's like any other regional rivalry. I think it means something to us. I don't know if anybody cares about it nationally, but we're going to have a good time with it. That's for sure.
You look at this is year three for Holgorsen. Houston's paying him a lot of money, highest paid coach in the so-called group of five. You hate to judge too many people on last year. It was a unique year, obviously. I don't even know if it's something you want to talk about, but what do you think he needs to do this year to stay off the hot seat going into year four? Is there a win total?
I don't know if there's a win total. Famously, the Chancellor Couture, said we fire coaches with 8 wins, and I wish she had never said it, but I know where her heart was, and I know why she said it. I love that our chancellor of our university is an athlete. She supports the athletic department so much, and she loves the University of Houston and the football program. And for that, we are so fortunate. We're so lucky. But Dana, getting to Dana, I like Dana a lot. I'll just start with, I like the fact that he had the guts to leave the Big 12 to come to the AAC, to come to Houston, and inherited a ragtag team and has had, had to fill in some spots. I think what he, the first time that he was here with Coach Sumlin, they went out and recruited some pretty good talent, and they had a couple kids that were pretty talented when they got here. Case Keenum, a quarterback, just to name one guy, I think the cupboard was a little bit bare when he came on board, so he had to go out there and do it the hard way, like everybody did. And then you have COVID on top of it. Our first 4 games were canceled, not by our fault. Hard to get any rhythm, But I think that he's done a good job in the offseason this year. He's got brought in some pretty good talented young athletes, and I think it sets up really well, to be totally honest with you. I think this really could be a fantastic year for Houston. I'm always the homer, I know, but I think it sets up well for the Cougs.
As far as the program itself, would you guys entertain the idea of moving to a Big 12 or to another conference, or do you guys feel like, as far as how strong is your ties to the American right now, do you think, from your vantage point?
Well, I think we feel like we were sort of a part of that first group at the American when the Big East invited us over. What an incredible opportunity that was. And to see the University of Houston logo in Times Square and that whole experience was amazing. I'd be lying if I wasn't disappointed when the basketball schools peeled out. And, that was a bummer. I'm glad you guys got in. You guys deserved to have a seat at the table. Getting out of Conference USA, I think we both did. I think we both deserve the opportunity. We both have great programs, historic programs that have always been scrappy and have given big schools, the bigger schools in our state, trouble. And that's what I respect about ECU. But look, if it is all about dollars and cents in the end, Dave, I think every school has to. You got to do the math, and you just have to add it up. And, I don't know what the Big 12 is going to do. They've got to either, they need to add teams. I guess they're going to, their contract's going to get negotiated down because they are dropping below 10 teams. But that number that gets negotiated down in the Big 12, let's talk through this. Let's say it drops to $15 million per team.
The gentleman from Kansas State said Bowlesby is saying $12 million.
Okay, $12 million per team. That's still what are we getting in the AAC?
Between seven and eight.
7.75 million or something.
That's between seven and eight.
So the math, you have no choice. You have no choice. You have to go We're not nonprofits. We're public institutions that have to pay bills too. So unless Mike Oresko has something up his sleeve with ESPN, and man, I hope that's what Mike's doing right now. I hope he's got some negotiation going on saying, we've been talking P6 forever, time for you to move us up. We are a legit conference. And if you put us head to head with the Pac-12, by the way, we could smoke most of those teams head to head anyway. Like, let's go. Let's make this thing right for these universities.
Ted, if you look at it too, with I know you're a Big 12 country, yeah, Pac-12, ACC. If you take Clemson out of the mix, there's a lot of schools in ACC that East Carolina could beat on a normal year. We're climbing the ladder. The last few years, not so much. But if you look at, there's a lot of teams we could beat in ACC now. Maybe we could hold our own in the, I don't know how we would in the Big 12 or Pac-12. That's not our area of the country, but
I bet we beat Kansas pretty good.
No question, Kyle.
Yeah, I hope so. But having said all that, when you look at the other conferences, that's what gives us a hard time. I don't know about you guys, but when you hear that term Power Five, the reason that we hate that term is there's a lot of schools in the Power Five that we could beat on a normal given year versus you name it. And that's what's so frustrating. I don't know about you guys, and you guys have, I mean, so many Heisman Trophy winners. You have all kinds of the storied program at Houston with basketball and football. And, I mean, I was telling the guys they're too young because they were born like 80 and 81. But I remember Five Slamma Jamma.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And different things with basketball and football. So you guys with the Southwest Conference growing up on television, you saw those teams play. That was what you saw back in the day.
Yeah.
So that being said, it just seems like, and I was telling the guys, not only the Big 12 American merger, but adding a BYU and
Boise State. That's where the money is. The money, you know, Ted was talking about the money just a minute ago, the difference between the Big 12 and the American. And I've been harping on this all night. To me, Bowlesby and Oresko, some egos need to be dropped. And probably more on the Big 12 end, but definitely more on the Big 12 end. The money's in a merger. If you take and you merge what the American has with what the Big 12 has, and I'm talking all sports, and unfortunately that would be leaving Navy as a football only and Wichita State as a non-football member out. You take 10 all sports from the American, you take the 8 left in the Big 12, that's an 18-team league. For football, you make it work, 2 9-team divisions. You play 8 division games. You play 1 crossover game, 3 non-conference games. To me, that's where your money is, and you also protect both leagues for any future expansion.
And there's a lot of great teams. We talked about that earlier, Ted. Speaking of the Southwest Conference, so many great rivalries. One team that has been an enigma to me, and I know money-wise in the 90s when they went, but it always bothered me with Arkansas, being a kid from the 80s, left and went to SEC. I understand why, but they don't have a lot to talk about. They have a national championship in basketball. Obviously, Nola Richardson in 94.
Yeah.
But they should have stayed. I understand why. South Carolina, when they left in the 70s and they went to the SEC, they fit more of the ACC. No offense. We love South Carolina. And we have a guy that doesn't like us.
We do?
I don't hate them. I'm just saying I don't hate them. I'm just saying that there's a perfect fit that seems like to me. But – having said all that, there's a lot of schools. We even have Tulsa in our league. You have SMU. You have Houston. You have Tulane. There's a lot of schools, Memphis, that are right close to you guys. And that when you add those Big 12 schools, man, I don't know about East Carolina, but East Carolina, we have maybe the Eastern schools, I guess we could look at. But those Texas, Oklahoma schools would fare very well with travel as far as geography and when it comes to money-wise.
I absolutely. I mean, I think there's a lot of advantages to it. And I think there's the regional rivalries are meaningful to me. I think there's new rivalries. Like I feel like Houston and ECU, like, look, I remember Shane Carden. Okay. I'm never going to forget Shane Carden and what he meant. And the fact that he went to high school in Houston, Texas made that even harder for me to stomach that as a Houstonian. But that's what I you know, think about those days and that rivalry that we had against each other. But now you can add in older rivalries, and I'm kind of the mindset that there's, it's all about what the product is that you're putting on television on Saturdays. Do people want to watch, like what do they want to watch? Do they want to watch this is maybe not a fair way to look at it, but like, do they really want to watch Temple against Tulane? Like, are people waiting to, go and watch that game, or would they rather watch Oklahoma State against Houston? Or SMU against TCU,
East Carolina against West Virginia.
Or East Carolina against West Virginia. Exactly. That's what so these are good matchups. Why don't we make that happen? What are we waiting for? Right. These are natural, throw down the gloves. We'll play in the parking lot because we don't like you guys, and this is the way it used to be. And we've gotten away from that. I think that those are exciting matchups that could happen where Kyle, where you you talk about the math, that's where you make that sort of, 2 + 2 = 10. You know what I mean? And that's where this thing gets really fun.
How about the regular season?
To me, one of the biggest benefactors of an expansion would be West Virginia, because they could keep their Big 12 name rights, if you only want to call the merged league the Big 12. They'd still be associated with Oklahoma State, et cetera. But now they'd be playing in a division that's regionally makes sense for them. Instead of having to travel out west for every game, they'd be playing East Carolina, UCF, Cincinnati.
South Florida.
Same time zone. Think about it, man. It makes it so much easier that way. It becomes a much more competitive league. Flying out to West Coast to do games. I don't know, man. I just can't see Oklahoma State going in and playing Cal or Stanford. Like, how does that work? Does anybody care about that matchup?
I don't think so. I think these conferences are hurting themselves when they kind of act, some of the fans, some of the media you hear nationally that are acting so elitist, when they're going, oh my God, we're going to have to play West Virginia. And I'm going, well, West Virginia has a good basketball. They have great baseball. Yeah. They have great football. Their fans are very passionate. We have kind of a rivalry with them, because we play them over the years. I mean, and we love to see that, that game. And I'm sure that West Virginia fans love to see East Carolina play, play as well. So
based on their record against us, they love to play.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, let's not even talk about that. Yeah, they definitely love that for sure. But do you guys have a timetable? Have you heard anything as far as any decisions made? Because I'm not hearing anything as far as like if there's any kind of merger, if there's anything going on, but I didn't know if you guys at Houston heard anything.
No, our athletic director is one of my former teammates at the University of Houston, Chris Pesman, a great guy, played linebacker with me as well. And Chris is a dear friend, and he and I talked like the first week of this whole thing, and his point of view was like, we're just going to sit back and wait. We're not going to do something, silly here. Aside from that, and talking with him, I also know that there are other people in the state of Texas that there's a lot of state legislators in the state of Texas that went to the University of Houston or have a law degree from the University of Houston. Mm-hmm. And a few years ago, Houston really invested in those relationships with the politicians. We made a big push, and this was led from our chancellor, to make sure that we reached out to all the state representatives to say, guys, this thing's going to shift again. And when it does, don't let Houston get left out in the cold. It's the third largest university in the state of Texas, and will soon be it potentially could be the second largest in the next 25 years. Don't miss out on this opportunity to bring up a school that deserves a shot.
That's fascinating. It's going to be interesting to see how it plays out with you guys with football. Talk about one thing that's fascinating to us is facilities wise, because it's something our fan base. I've used the term a lot this week, but my word for this week has been thirsty. So we're thirsty, hungry for our facility upgrades, and I say that nicely, hoping that our administration.
Dave, are you thirsty?
Yeah, we're thirsty. So we're hungry, thirsty, whatever word you want to put in there for our facility upgrades. It does take money, but if you don't put it out there, then it'll never happen. How about you guys about facilities? I know you guys have a lot of great stuff there, the University of Houston.
We've invested big time in the infrastructure. And by the way, you guys have done a great job with your stadium. I was there during construction the last time we played you guys in person, and I'm so excited. I love the stadium. I love what you guys have done with it, and I hope you guys continue to do that. Get a big end zone facility, get a big bubble or something down at the end there to make sure that you guys have indoor practice facilities. That's got to happen next.
Yep.
At Houston, we did that. We have a 100-yard indoor facility, and a lot of the schools have not gone with 100 yards, and that's okay too. TCU has a 70-yard one, and so does SMU. They're still fantastic, and you can still hold a regular practice in those. So there's options that are out there. We've really sort of changed our game day experience at the University of Houston. So we do, and it's so dang hot down here, and you guys know too, because it's hot, it's hot in Greenville as well. But you know, it's so darn hot at the beginning of the season. We bring the fans inside in the indoor, and we have like a nice big cocktail party on the inside there, and the kids can run around and kick the football around and throw the ball. There's plenty of room in there. So we've had this whole indoor experience that we do before the game, in addition to the tailgating that happens. It's a great way to generate a little bit of money on the side for your ticket team. So you got to kind of think about it that way. It's not just a practice facility. It can be so many more. It can do so much more for your university.
So you're using your practice facility for indoor tailgating prior to your games.
That's it. Yep.
Send that to John Gilbert. There you go. That's a great idea.
So think about it. So I've got, you know, the regular season tickets, but then you buy a special pass to get you a season pass to go into the indoor facility beforehand. It sounds like a money grab, but it's not expensive. It's like $10 a week or something. It's awesome because again, it's going to be 98 degrees and 98% humidity. The first 4 weeks of our season, before you go sweat it out in the stadium, go have some cocktails inside the indoor. You know, let your kids blow off some steam a little bit so that by the time you get in the stadium, they're all worn out. You know, they're all exhausted and you can actually enjoy the game, you know.
12 o'clock kickoff for South Carolina in Greenville game
oh
first
God,
home
yeah.
game. Yeah, that would come in handy. Speaking of your facilities, Ted, your stadium is called TDECU. we have not had a chance to play there since you guys have that stadium. So do you think somebody's head's going to explode this year when ECU is playing at TDECU Stadium and Mike Houston is on the sidelines at East Carolina playing Houston? I mean, somebody calling that game, I hope it's not you, Ted, calling that game's head is going to literally explode.
I think you're right. I think you're absolutely right. I think that the irony of the name isn't lost on us, that's for sure. We've joked about it with you guys in the past, but yeah, I think it's a little maybe we didn't think ahead on our sponsor quite well on that one. Talking about ECU scoring a TD, I don't know about that.
How about Ted, with the fact that most of the media always calls us Eastern Carolina, they get it wrong. So that's the one thing that we always hear that drives us crazy in Greenville, is that they can't get our name right. It's not too hard to see Houston, right? But for some reason, it's pretty, East Carolina.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's funny. We may never live that name down. We're going to have to play better defense, I think, just because of the name of the stadium.
No doubt about it. As far as Houston football, you guys, with that, we're talking about 8 wins. But as far as Dana is concerned, we're talking about hot seat, I know earlier, but with him coming back, it was such a great move for you guys to get him back. And I think he had pretty much done everything he could do at West Virginia. But with the college football playoff, with the history of your school and everything, do you see your team getting in that top 25, top 15? I mean, Houston's got such a great program. And, you know, I was telling my sister many years ago, when using an analogy of A-Rod, I said the reason why Yankee fans got mad at him is because they're paying him a lot of money to win games and hit home runs. As far as Dana's concerned, with the $4 million a year, how much longer do you think for, you know, the pressure, because you need to be a top 15, top 20 program, right?
Dana understands what every coach understands. Me, sorry if you lost me.
Yeah, you're cutting in and out, Ted.
Can you hear me now, guys?
We got you now.
Okay, sorry about that, internet. No, he's a pro. He's a professional. I think Dana knows what the situation is. I think, but I don't think he worries about that because I think Dana is going to be so focused on executing his game plan and getting the players mentally ready. That's what it's all about. And I don't think he's going to listen to the sports talk radio noise that we have and all those other things. You know, he just needs to do, we showed some signs last year. We definitely stumbled a couple of times, but we showed some signs of having some pretty talented special players on the field. And it started, you can't be a good team without a great quarterback. And Clayton Tune is a great quarterback. Make no doubt about it. This young man is every bit of what you want. He can throw the ball incredibly well, but he can also run the ball. And that's sort of a little secret there. He is a runner too. So, Dana's going to have to tune all that out and don't worry about it. You know what I mean? Those of us that know him, we know he's a good coach. He's a great guy. The players love him. It'll take care of itself. I think Cougars are going to be great this year.
No doubt about it. I know Bubba wanted to talk about your legendary dad. What a great coach, great man. Right, Bubba?
Yeah, Ted, you referenced him earlier in the conversation. Obviously played at Texas A&M and then coached at Houston, both for the Oilers as well as the Cougs. And just talk about your dad. And, at the time during my childhood that I really remember him is in his late elementary and early middle school years when Warren Moon was quarterbacking there for the Oilers and lighting defenses up.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, man. Those were some great days. The Oilers were that was a special time and an incredible team, a great defense and an incredible offense. I mean, I just think back about that offensive line with Mike Munchak and Dean Steinkuhler and Bruce Matthews, like just those three guys, like they're, Hall of Fame guys, all three of them. And to see what Munchak has gone on to do as a coach and same thing with Bruce Matthews. And then you've got Warren Moon who, I think that the run and shoot proved what he was as a quarterback, an incredible passer with unbelievable touch, could throw it in a, I mean, the guy had an incredibly powerful arm, but he was fearless. He would thread the needle and he destroyed defenses all the time. You know, his only nemesis was Rod Woodson coming on the blitz from the Pittsburgh Steelers. That was probably the only challenge that Warren had when he was playing, but yeah, I'm very proud to be my dad's son. Growing up, I grew up around football and I was blessed to, be the youngest of our family. So I got to be kind of tag along with my older siblings and I was always the kid at training camp or the ball boy. I was the kid on the sidelines and just incredible relationships and incredible memories for me as a young man, and then to be able to grow up and then play for my dad at the University of Houston was a special thing for me. And it was a lot of fun. And it was the best part about it was that we were a good football team. That was the best part about it, was that we had a lot of fun and we beat a lot of people back in those days.
No question about it. What a legend. And certainly, when it comes to Houston, good luck to the Cougs this year. It's going to be, I know, an interesting year. And you, as you alluded to earlier about the no fault of your own with all those games that were canceled left and right, we were so frustrated as college football fans and fans of the American for you guys to have all those games canceled. No fault is your own, as you're saying. But certainly good luck this year. We'd love to have you back on. You've been a lot of fun and entertaining tonight. Here on a Tuesday night as we get ready for college football. How can people find your work? I guess the TuneIn Radio app, or how can people listen to you?
Yeah, yeah. We're IMG Houston or Learfield Houston is the way you on the TuneIn app. And you can be on Party_Time.
Well, Ted, thank you so much. Appreciate it. And again, look, having you again very, very soon. Thanks so much, man. Have a good one.
You bet. Thanks a lot, Dave.
All right. Bye-bye. All right. Appreciate Ted very much as he was with us tonight. And guys, very excited. I know that Kyle and Bubba were looking forward to. We have another great show on Thursday. And then Saturday is a huge day. Fall camp going on. But Saturday, Media Day, is we're going to be broadcasting there. And at Town Bank Tower, it's going to be a lot of fun, guys.
Yeah, absolutely.
Go ahead, Bubba.
Tremendous content coming up, and like Dave was saying, and we'll be at Media Day on Saturday. And then in addition to that, you talk about Thursday's show, and we'll catch up with the chairman of the Board of Trustees, Scott Shook. So we'll have that for you at 8 o'clock on Thursday night. But kicking the show off prior to that, Charles Arbuckle, college football analyst, played at UCLA as well as in the NFL. So we'll talk to him. So those are some of the things we have headed your way. And Dave, after Kyle chimes in here, that's what a couple other things I want to touch on before we put this to bed.
I always love having Charles on. Always interested to hearing how his brother John's doing.
There you go. Ladies and gentlemen, that Garfield reference, it never dies. It never does. Hey, Bubba, I want to mention, too, by the way, our season ticket giveaway. I know people are curious about that. I'm mentioning on my local radio show as well on Magic 95.9. But I know that we have that. We're going to give away coming up as we have on the screen on the 31st. And a lot of fun for sure for Pirate football fans. Get on the – hey, a lot of you guys, maybe ladies, may be upset with the last few years. Get on the bandwagon now. Mike Houston, this is the year. And here's your chance to have two tickets to every single game at East Carolina football for the 21 season.
Yep. Go to our YouTube channel, search the Sports Objective on YouTube, and you'll see our channel. Make sure you subscribe, watch the video, and it'll tell you how to enter the contest. You can put your name in the hat by subscribing and then screenshotting that and sending it to us via email, sportsobj@gmail.com, or you can respond to either our pinned post on Facebook or our pinned tweet on Twitter. That's at the Sports OBJ on Twitter. 12,700 season tickets have been sold. Really looking like we'll top 13,000. Maybe we can get to 14 as the original goal was. In addition to that, before we wrap this up, I wanted to chime in with just a huge thank you to Bill Clark and the entire yes. Clark family for buying 6,000 tickets in the upper deck for that South Carolina game. As we seek to reward those individuals who've meant so much to Eastern North Carolina as first responders over the last year plus.
No doubt about it. It's a big deal because not only that's where Clark LeClaire Stadium, half of that name comes from because of the commitment the Clark family has given over many years, and we appreciate them so much. This is a big deal to us because the South Carolina game, guys, is a big game. I mean, it's a chance that I was talking to my barber today. Believe it or not, I do get my hair cut. He's an East Carolina fan, and I was telling him how the
Appalachian – waste of money.
There you go. Appalachian State and the South Carolina games both are like bowl games, and they're big, big games to start out the year. Every single game is important, but those first two games are really important to the Pirates. And that South Carolina game to get 6,000 seats they bought was September 11th, the 20th anniversary of 9/11. Hard to believe, guys, and what a great thing they did for not only the program to help East Carolina, but to honor our first responders.
Yeah, Bill Clark Holmes. If you're going to buy a house in Eastern North Carolina, check with Bill Clark Holmes first. All Pirate fans very appreciative of that. 6,000 tickets purchased for the South Carolina game. Dave, don't go telling the Gamecock fans this is like a bowl game to us. So that's you're feeding into the narrative.
It is important though.
But it's not our bowl game.
No, that's not what I'm talking about. That's not what I meant.
It may be from the standpoint of, you know, if we're going to make it to a bowl.
Right.
And South Carolina's going to have a chance to make it to a bowl. Right. It could be very, very big in that regard for both teams.
That's Bubba, do you have any eligibility left?
I do not.
If you did, you may be able to join the quarterback roster at South Carolina.
I don't know about that. They don't need a washed up 40-year-old, speaking of some other football news that we have failed to mention. I know I shared it with you guys in our group text, and that is in Jake Verity. And Jake Verity obviously has a very tough task of making that Baltimore Ravens roster with the kicker they have and Justin Tucker, but he drills a 42-yarder and a 53-yarder. I believe the 53-yarder, was as the first half was coming to a close. Jake Verity doing great things and certainly doing everything that he can do to earn a shot with someone.
Yeah, and it's not so important that he makes the Ravens roster as that he performs well. Somebody else who needs a kicker notices and he gets signed.
No question about it, especially the all-time leading scorer for the Pirates. And he was automatic, man. Love that guy very, very much. And I think the sad thing is a lot of guys like him played in an era where, they literally now that you're going to see starting this year, especially next year, their hard work, the foundation they put in to help Mike Houston, and hopefully they'll get credit where credit's due that they put in the hard work. And speaking of the hard work, guys, fall camp's going on. Anything that you guys have seen so far before we go?
It was interesting. Snead got injured, and some other receivers had to step up. They played. Sounds like they played. Gentlemen, help me. The tight end from Oklahoma,
Ryan Jones.
Sounds like they played him in the slot some, kind of the Snead's place. So that's interesting to me.
Yeah, there's more weapons than we've ever had. We talk about tight end. You could talk about that side of the football. Defensively, we're going to be a lot better, much improved. It's going to be a good year for Pirate fans. And hopefully the ultimate thing is COVID and injuries are the two things that concerns me. Other than that, I think we're going to be in really good shape.
Yeah, well, it's getting closer. Looking forward to the season. Tall task against Appalachian State in week one. I firmly believe they are the tougher of the first two opponents. And that's no disrespect to South Carolina, just stating facts. Week one, tough task ahead of us against the Mountaineers. But I would caution all Pirate fans: don't get your feelings hurt too much if things don't go our way against App State, because I think some people have some unrealistic expectations on what we are and what App is these days.
Yeah, speaking of egos, we've got to definitely crawl before we walk, and we were knocked down so far, a deep hole that we've got to climb out of, and hopefully we can sooner than later. It's been since 2014, since a bowl game. It's time to go bowling yet again. Bubba, do you have anything before we go, my friend?
Kyle was talking about tight end play. I see Shane Calhoun having a breakout season. That's something that Holt Naylors and Coach Houston have referenced here recently, saying the other guys in that room, be it Ryan Jones or Aaron Jarman, different ones, and they definitely bring things to the table. But right now, Shane Calhoun's the most complete of the group. And last year, I think he ended up with 5 catches. We didn't have
came
that
on at the end of the year.
Yeah, yep. So he had a big catch early in the game against SMU. I remember some other nice catching runs he had in those limited 5 receptions.
Yeah, but he looks good when he gets the ball in his hand, Bubba.
Yeah, I really think that with his development between last season and now and everything we're hearing, I could see him having 20, 25 catches or something this season and really being a key contributor.
Yeah, Holton referred to him as the best tight end in the American.
There you have it. That's a strong statement considering our conference for sure. All right, guys, we're going to get out of here Thursday night. Don't forget to join us. Huge show. Scott Shook of the ECU trustees, the board chairman, he'll be with us. We'll have Charles Arbuckle, college football analyst. Plus, don't forget Saturday, we'll have, no doubt about it, a great time at ECU Media Day at Town Bank Tower. Don't forget to subscribe on YouTube as your chance to win ECU football tickets. Until next time, you've been watching and listening to The Sports Objective. Good night, everybody, and go Pirates! Yeah!
Yo, what's going on, y'all? This is Udon Cheek, assistant track and field coach at East Carolina University. You are plugged into the Sports Objective Podcast. If you are a fan, you are plugged into the right place. And if you're really a fan, you will share that link. My heart is purple and gold. I'm a pirate down to my soul. And I don't back down, not at all. Find out when the cannons explode. Boom!